It's time for Making It Personal, a personalized SC podcast brought to you by the South Carolina Department of Education's Personalized Learning Team. Let's jump into today's episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Making It Personal podcast. I am your host, Carrie Beach, and today I am joined by a very special guest. Today we have with us Kim Lawson from Batesburg-Leesville Middle School, and she is our featured guest for today. So Kim, I'm going to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself, and then we'll jump into the conversation.
Okay. Well, hello, everybody. As Carrie said, my name is Kimberly Lawson. I teach seventh grade ELA and currently geography at Batesburg-Leesville Middle School. This is my eighth or ninth year here at Batesburg, but I've been teaching for about 14 years total. And as far as like personalized learning work is concerned, I've been dabbling in the field, if you will, for about the past 5 years.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we're super glad to have you. And today's topic is all about pathways. But before we get into pathways specifically, could you give us a little bit of backstory on your education journey and how you got to this point? And I know you mentioned that you've been dabbling in some work with student-centered learning practices. So tell us a little bit about the origins of your journey with that.
Sure. So Batesburg-Leesville is actually a very small district. We only have 4 schools total, but I will say that the district is very progressive. And so about 5 years ago, we worked very closely with Brenda and Robin. And I remember initially they sent a team of us to go work with the State Department, not really knowing what was going to come of it. And eventually, just some of us naturally gravitated to this idea and really jumped on board. And I was one of them, just really excited to try something new and different. And I was intrigued by all the different ideas that I was hearing. And so it was actually Maggie Ellis, who no longer teaches with us. She's actually the assistant principal at the high school now, but she visited a school district called Kettle Moraine in Wisconsin, and they've been doing personalized learning and these whole like learning pathways and progressions for quite a while, I think well over a decade now. And so she went and visited with a team from our district and came back and approached a couple of us and was just asking questions and tossing ideas around. And we pretty much were on board. And from there, they assembled like a team of us. And we really took this idea that we all had in theory and were working with in theory and turned it into reality. And so it's my second year actually working on a team to implement these different components of personalized learning, learning progressions, and learning pathways.
Could you give us maybe a look into what your entry point was to the work? What stood out to you most, and where did you get started initially with your students?
So this is actually really funny. So initially it was flexible seating.
Okay.
And this was starting with Brenda and Robin at its inception of this whole idea of personalized learning. Mm-hmm. And me and another co-teacher, we were like, flexible seating. And we're looking at all the different examples and the different ways you can utilize like your classroom instead of just having traditional student desks and chairs. And so I was writing donors choose grants. And by the end of the year, I had a fully funded flexible seating classroom. And Carrie, let me tell you, that furniture did not make it past year two. And I now am back to traditional student desks and chairs in my classroom. And so once that, I kind of bombed in that area. And I don't want to say bombed as a negative thing. Like I tried it. It didn't quite work the way I wanted it to. Then I moved on to choice boards and playlists.
Okay.
And did that for a couple years. But then pretty soon, like everybody in the school was doing choice boards and playlists. And I think the kids were getting burnt out. Mm. And it was about the same time that the district really had a focus where we started working with like the critical standards and from there putting together learning pathways for students. And that's the journey I'm on now, is how do I create effective learning pathways for students and helping them understand their learning and how to get there.
Awesome. So another question that comes to mind for me is, if we're trying to explain to educators how to make the shift from a choice board to maybe a learning pathway in the way that you see them, because understanding that learning pathways can look a lot differently depending on, you know, the teacher, the context, whatever. What would you say would be that shift from how you used to do choice boards to now where you're heading now with learning pathways?
So a choice board is essentially what it sounds like. You have different assignments, different activities that are organized for a student, where there might be must-dos, can-dos, and then different assignments or activities that they can do if they're in that extending category. And initially, it was just kind of like, here, if you scored this on your pre-assessment, you'll do all the must-dos and maybe, or yeah, all the must-dos and maybe two can-dos of your choice. And so that's where that choice piece comes in. And the math teacher here that I work with still uses choice boards and playlists, but she teaches math. And what I've learned in my journey is that math and the way their progressions and pathways look didn't quite fit for me in ELA. And so I spent a lot of time trying to create these activities and these things for the kids to do, but it really wasn't producing the desired outcome that I wanted, which is why I shifted away. And I really don't use choice boards and playlists anymore. What I use is a data conferencing template. And I use this with my students. And so this is actually the way that I individualize learning for them, but it's not a document for myself. My students and I actually look at it several times in the course of a quarter or a semester, and they always have access to it. And it contains everything that they need, from their MAP data to their goals. We set goals for MAP, goals as a reader and a writer. Anytime I confer with students, whether it's about their writing, their reading, books that they read, because I conduct book talks with my students, and I also conduct oral fluency assessments. And so I've made that shift away from this choice board to a more, it's almost like record keeping. I don't really know what you would call it, but I call it like my data conferencing sheet. So
take me through what that student experience is when it comes to engaging with your form of pathways in ELA.
Okay. So as a student, you'll actually spend a lot of time individually conferencing with me, especially at the beginning of the school year. And I have a table set up at the back of my room, and I'll jokingly say, like, come sit in my office. And the student and I will sit at the table together, and I'll introduce them to that data conferencing sheet I was telling you about earlier. Mm-hmm. And on it, we'll discuss their scores, their goals, things that they want to achieve this year. And so I'll use MAP data as an example, getting them just to understand what the numbers mean. So at our school in the seventh grade, a 225 is the minimum score to be considered like on grade level. Well, a child doesn't know that. What does that mean to be on grade level? And so just the time it takes to sit with them to get them to understand, okay, I might actually be really strong in the area of literary text, but maybe I'm weak in nonfiction. And so helping a student understand that, hey, your strength is actually in reading literature, that fiction, but let's start working on some nonfiction structures. When we go to the library, I'd like for you to start checking out some nonfiction books. There we can start to explore, because for whatever reason, students in middle school, they hate nonfiction. And I've been told that in elementary levels, they love it. And so somewhere along the way, nonfiction becomes synonymous with boring. Mm-hmm. And so by having this conference with them and exploring that as my example, okay, well, what are your interests? And then they start to realize, okay, well, wait a minute, I like dirt biking. I can go read books on it? Yes, by all means. And so I'm getting them reading, they're understanding an area that they need to work in, and then they're also improving to work toward that goal, if it was MAP goal. So I guess to answer your question, the pathway with me isn't necessarily a list or a set of activities or assignments that they need to complete. It's more natural, I'd like to think, a more progressive way of meeting the student where they're at and helping grow them while also expecting them to take some initiative, but understanding where they're at as a learner and understanding what these scores mean and the things that I can do to achieve those goals.
I love what you're saying and the fact that you are helping to make a lot of things that are typically veiled for students more transparent, because to your point, a lot of times in education, we have a lot of scores and, you know, all these different metrics, but the students themselves don't really know where they are. And so if they don't know where they are, then they can't really have a buy-in and moving from one stage to the next. So I really like that. And I would love to get a clean copy of your data sheet that you use with students.
Yes.
So that we can link it in the description of this episode and so that folks can take a look at that for sure.
Sure, sure. I'll send you a blank template, and then I'll also send an actual student copy with their name edited out, of course, okay, just so people can see like how I actually color code and things of that nature. So if you were to walk into my classroom now in February and approach just about any student and say, hey, let me see your data sheet, most of them can pull it up and explain to you what their scores mean, their current goals, the things that they're working on. And I also want to add, I've been working on this. This is probably the third or fourth iteration of this conference sheet, just because every year I think of ways that I can make it better and do more with it. So I will be more than happy to share that.
Awesome. So with this pathway, how frequently are students going back to it and updating it? And is there some sort of reflection piece embedded in that? Would that be weekly, monthly?
So in terms of reflecting back, we do map testing in the fall, the winter, and the spring. So we definitely take a look at those to see where they started the year, setting goals, midpoint check-in, and at the end of the year. In addition, anytime students and I complete a writing assignment, we'll meet and we'll reflect back on and enter that data. I conduct once a quarter an oral fluency assessment, just because I like to have some one-on-one time to hear my students read and their progression of reading with fluency over time. And then when students read books on their own, they'll fill out a reading conference request form, and we'll actually sit at the back of the room and we'll have just a quick book talk. And I like to make it as positive as possible, so there's a positive association with reading. So I might ask the kids, like, can you give me a quick summary? What's the theme? Who was your favorite character? What would you rate it out of 5 stars and why? I have like one of the kids said my treat bucket is an old fashioned one, because I have like candy, stickers, bracelets, you name it in the bucket. So they get to choose a treat, and then they get a sticker, and they get to go put the sticker out on the reading chart.
Oh, awesome.
So depending on the student, I mean, we could be meeting weekly, monthly, depending on them reading the books in addition to the assignments and then the map testing.
How have students responded to this structure that you've implemented in your classroom? Do you feel like they've shifted more from when you were engaging in maybe choice boards or another structure to this current model? What kind of change, if any, have you seen in students?
Yes, I feel like first and foremost, students have a better understanding of themselves as a learner. If at any time they forget their goal or what they're currently working on, they can refer back to that data sheet without having to ask me. And I just believe that because of the time I take with them and conferring and really helping them understand the breakdown of it, they themselves just have a much better understanding of where their challenges and their strengths lie. And so there's much more responsibility placed on them to take ownership over their learning. Not every student cares, for lack of a better word. And so I don't want to paint it like, oh, every kid is super engaged and they're doing all the things. But I feel that compared to how I used to do it, there's much more student involvement and engagement, and they have a better understanding of what those scores and the things that we're doing in class mean.
Now, do you take those scores or your understanding of where students are and use that to kind of inform your lesson structures and the activities and things that you create for students?
Yes, that's every year. That's a challenge, because what worked one year with a group of students will not work this next year. Mm-hmm. And so at the beginning of the year, I give a reading interest inventory. And so my year is pretty much the things that we read, the projects we do, the nonfiction research papers, it's all structured around student interest. And I'm really trying to let kids have more of a role in developing the parameters. And so we did at the beginning of the year, it was a travel blog, because I also teach geography. So we were trying to integrate, and the kids set the parameters of what we were doing. They helped build the rubric. And I felt that that was probably one of the best experiences with a research paper, because they had ownership over it. So,
yeah, absolutely. That's such a cool idea.
Thank you.
Well, what advice would you give to other educators specifically? You can either A, target it specifically to ELA educators or educators in general who are just getting started with pathways or who may not have started at all, but they are hearing this episode and they are interested in digging in a little bit more so that they can give their students more ownership. What advice would you give them?
So I guess I would like to preface this with saying I've been working on this for many, many years now. I have a phenomenal team. I have amazing supportive administration and a district office that pretty much allows us to fail. And I think that's where you need to be with your mindset, is that you're going to try something and more than likely you're going to fail, but that's where the growth comes from. And those are the things we try to teach our students.
Yeah.
And so you have to be willing to take a step in some sort of direction, whether you want to dabble, like work on, okay, well, how do I set up conferencing times in class? Because your students have to be engaged in that independent learning time while you're back conferencing, either individual or small group. Maybe you want to try working on creating a template to record your own data. And again, I've worked on this 3 or 4 iterations of it. It's probably will not be complete for as long as I'm a teacher, because it will always have to change and shift with my students. Maybe you want to try working on a critical standard. So choosing one standard that's deemed critical to begin working on a progression with, depending on your subject area. I would not try to do everything all at one time. And also, please don't think that I do this every day. The structure of my class is typically warm up. I do a model mini lesson. Students will go into their independent learning time, and then I'm pulling students. But we don't do that every day. Like, we're doing argumentative writing right now, and my kids just prepped for the past couple of days, and we did a debate where we were working with this idea of like claim, counterclaim, rebuttal. And so don't think that the things I'm telling you are what we do every day and that you have to do learning pathways every day. Your students still have to do those fun things, those fun projects. So just don't get overwhelmed and try something small.
I love that. And I repeat this almost every episode. Our motto that we like to say is to think big, start small, and scale fast. And that definitely seems like that's been the path that you've taken. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yes. Yeah, because I think that perfectly sums up this roller coaster of a ride I've been on. Yes. So,
absolutely. Well, if there's anyone listening who wants to get in touch with you to pick your brain or, you know, hear a little bit more about some of the cool work that you're doing in ELA, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Email is usually the easiest. My email is klawson@lex3.org.
Well, thank you so much, Kim, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back to close things out. Thanks again for tuning in to today's episode of Making It Personal. Connect with the Personalized Learning team by visiting our website, personalizedsc.ed.sc.gov. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, share with a friend, and tune in for a new episode every month. We'll catch you next time on Making It Personal. See ya!